It's a Monday, and it's not just any Monday. It is time for the Stanley Cup final to commence. It's Tampa Bay and Montreal. Half of it, you could have expected. The other half, not a chance in heck.
Nope.
We'll address that with Darren Pang and Mike Zeisberger. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. It's the podcast for a Monday. Back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. Darren Pang is with us from Parts Unknown. He's not in St. Louis today, probably on a golf course. Mike Zeisberger is with NHL.com from the home office. Panger, are you playing golf? Are you preparing for the playoffs? What exactly are you doing?
Yeah, very much preparing for the playoffs, fellas. Great to be on this award-winning show. I usually take Monday off. Mondays are an off day unless there's a charity golf thing. The country club is closed. I take a breather. I played yesterday. And no, I don't like to name drop, but I play with a fellow Nepean Raider named Steve Eiserman. We had a great day yesterday, but today's
never heard of him.
Work day.
Yeah, oh, never heard of him.
You know, you've got to think that Steve's a little proud of what's going on in Tampa anyway, right, Darren?
Yeah. Actually, he had a lot of members at his club here in suburban Michigan. Came up to him yesterday. One fella had a Tampa Bay Lightning golf shirt on, and they were going back and forth. Yeah, so... Oh, for sure. I mean, look at, you know, we know that Julian's done a terrific job, but yeah, I mean, Steve's footprints and fingerprints are all over that.
So in other words, in that twosome, we had the architects of the last two Stanley Cup winners. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We forgot about the gold medals too.
Oh, okay. We'll get back to that.
Architect's a big word, Mike. Architect's too big of a word for me.
Throughout these playoffs, I dare say Montreal has been the underdog in every series. And I don't doubt for a second that they're the underdog against Tampa Bay. And that was almost an inevitability. I think Tampa Bay arguably would have been a favorite against almost anybody. But when you go through the playoffs the way Montreal has gone through these playoffs, can you throw all this stuff out the window? I mean, at what point do you become a believer that this Montreal team, whatever they have morphed into, are the real deal? Z, to you first.
Bob, I think they are the real deal. And I mean, in the same way that you talked about how Tampa Bay would probably be favorites against anybody, you could have said the same thing again about the Vegas Golden Knights, who tied for the most points in the National Hockey League during the regular season. We saw what Montreal did for them or did against them. I got one, I'll throw out one stat and then throw it out to you guys. But so in three rounds, the Montreal Canadiens have faced some of the top scorers in the league. And we're talking about it specifically, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Scheifele, although it was just for one game, Kyle Connor, Nikolaj Ehlers, Max Pacioretty, and Mark Stone. Of those players, the Montreal Canadiens have allowed three total goals in 17 games to that group of players, some of the best players in the league. So, I mean, if we're looking for evidence that they're the real deal, I think you got to look no further than that, because those are some elite scorers that they've shut down, and it's been a lot deeper than just Carey Price.
Panger?
Yeah, you know, Zia, those are incredible points. And I think people will start believing when Montreal wins game 1-3-2. I believe in team chemistry and harmony and overcoming what they've overcome. After all, it is a team sport. They didn't pick an individual sport, and they're playing like a team. They're boxing out, they're protecting. I think that Tampa Bay is a bit of a different animal, but every other team that they have faced has had maybe better transition than what the Tampa Bay Lightning have had. They've stopped entries into their own zone from some of the best transition teams and some of the best moving defensemen in the National Hockey League, Colorado and Vegas, no question about that. So if they can eliminate them from getting in the zone and eliminate that transition game, why wouldn't they be able to eliminate a transition game from the Tampa Bay Lightning that isn't nearly as good as the previous two teams I just mentioned?
You know, the other thing to talk about is that the Montreal penalty kill has been so good. And you think that the last time they allowed a power play goal, I believe, was May 25th in game four against Toronto. And it just so happens they started this streak. It coincided with them winning three games in a row against the Maple Leafs, four games in a row against Winnipeg, and then winning four of six against Vegas. Their ability to with their size on the blue line particularly and their aggressive penalty kill, the aggressive forwards, they've been able to change the personality of a game and take advantage of it. And I think score three shorthanded goals at the same time over that period of time. So that's the amazing thing.
Actually, John, and this is, you know, to further your point with the Montreal penalty kill, I mean, they've killed off 30 in a row. That's kind of eye-popping in itself. But here's the thing that gets me. They played 17 games, okay? When they've been shorthanded in these 17 games, they have scored more goals for than they've allowed, which is three,
right,
in the entire playoffs. So their penalty killers are plus one. If they kept those numbers. And I think that's amazing. I mean, you know, it just shows you how important that's been in their run.
And their best
penalty killer. This is a bit of a different animal, though.
Yeah, and their best penalty killer doesn't score goals. So,
this power play has a lot of different setups, though, fellas. A lot different than it looked to me like what I saw in the regular season from the Vegas Golden Knights. Their calmness and composure with the puck, and a guy like Jonathan Marchessault was not to be found in that series, guys that they needed. They looked like they were kind of choking on their twigs a little bit, to be quite honest with you, with the pressure on Vegas. Tampa Bay is different that way, and they've got, especially if Kucherov's a healthy Kucherov, if he can, you know, they get that puck going from right face-off circle to left face-off circle to down low to back to the point.
Yeah.
There's just too many options. It reminds me a little bit of the Colorado power play that once it gets in your head, once you back off, then that could break the seal that Montreal has had. But in saying all that, I give credit to, as you just said, John, certainly Carey Price, I mean, is spectacular in his reads. It's not that he's a great goalie. We already know that. It's your ability, hockey sense-wise, to see what's coming off that stick and to not overcheat and overcompensate in one area because you know there's a backdoor play. And there's no better goaltender right now than Carey Price at reading the play. I think Vasilevsky is the greatest goaltender in the world, but I think hockey sense-wise, I think Carey Price is a better goaltender than he is.
Well, we talk about this every now and again, we talk about it all the time, the importance of goaltending in the playoffs, and the team with the best goaltender almost invariably wins. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean the best goaltender. It means the hottest goaltender at that time. You've got two very good, well, arguably great goaltenders here. But really, in my mind, the issue becomes less about the goaltenders and more about the reputation of the goaltenders and how the forwards get psyched out by thinking they have to be super perfect in order to score. And that takes that extra split second of thinking, looking, deciding what you got to do, and you wind up getting nothing. As a result of it, the psychology of playing against a great goaltender is most intriguing. Panger, give me your two cents on that.
Yeah, well, shooters didn't have that problem against me, Bob, but I do understand what you're saying. they you know, because we saw a little bit of that against Carey. We saw a lot of, you know, a lot of shots, a lot of times, a little double clutching, trying to be perfect, trying to put it inside the bar when you don't have to put it inside the bar. So I do agree with you on that. I think there's always been a fascination about the reputation of goaltenders, and you know, Carey Price absolutely does have that. Now the importance is the first period. It's the first power play against them. It's the first game. That's why I was saying that this is my opinion that Montreal steps in and wins game one. I think that's the one easier game to win, stifle the crowd, quiet them down. The way the Montreal Canadiens play as well, I've not seen a team use the boards as much as they do. They don't go in the middle of the ice ever. They just rim it around the boards. They win board battles or they take faceoffs or whatever. They kind of calm things down and bore the opposition's crowd. So their goal is going to be quiet everybody in Tampa Bay and just play this nice little tidy rogue game and let their goaltender handle the shots from the outside. And then they'll score timely goals. But, you know, getting back to the mental aspect about that, I think Vasilevsky has a little bit of that as well. But I think he's getting into some habits right now that can be exposed. And Montreal's goalie coach, Sean Burke, will be poring over the reverse VH, how many times he gets beat between the blocker side of his body and his arm, how many rebounds he gives off his low pad on the far side shot. So there's a lot of things that Montreal is pouring over, I'm sure, to exploit him as well.
How much does experience play a role in this series? I mean, there's no doubt the Montreal Canadiens have negligible, if any, and Tampa Bay has oodles. Does it matter? Z?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with you in the fact that in saying that Montreal doesn't have the experience. They don't have guys that who have won the cup with Montreal. But if you look at the guys that Mark Bergevin brought in, Corey Perry, Eric Staal, Gustafson,
Edmondson.
Edmondson, and obviously Jake Allen. Yeah. Those are guys who have won Stanley Cups, who have been vital in the dressing room. So, you know, Bob, I'm not sure that they really need that much more of that, because this is a team that, you know, when we talk about, you know, after game four in Toronto, when they were down 3-1 to the Maple Leafs, you know, this is a team that would, you know, I hate to use the cliches, but they had their backs against the wall, and it's become an us against the world thing. So I think for these guys, it's just, this is the next step in us against the world. So I think they do have enough experience. And when you talk about Shea Weber and Carey Price, they won an Olympic gold medal. And for people that, you know, especially for Canadian hockey players, that's as much pressure as there is, as well as winning a Stanley Cup.
A writer just used 14 different cliches in that one statement.
Yep. It was like taking quotes from you when you played, Panger.
I never used big words like that.
Don't use words larger than marmalade, boys. Those are the rules.
Well, so Z seems to think experience means nothing. All I'm saying is that Tampa has plenty of it,
yeah,
and Montreal has less. Many of their significant players are seeing all this for the first time. And I'm not talking about just the playoffs, although that's true too. But you're coming down to a Stanley Cup final. That's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it, Panger?
Yeah, I think it's important for Tampa Bay, Bob, because they're opening up in their building. I think you see a lot of teams kind of gag and not be themselves, you know, when they haven't been there before and they open up on home ice. The crowds, the emotion, the energy, the expectations are so exciting that you get ahead of yourself. But that's where I think the experience of Tampa Bay is going to come into play here, to be able to handle the ebbs and flows of the emotion and the disappointments. And that's one area that I didn't think Vegas handled very well. They finally got booed in their own building. You know, that just doesn't happen. Those crowds, that atmosphere is always about kind of just enthusiastic energy all the time. It didn't matter what was going on, because they just loved their team. But now their expectations are higher. And so the critical eye became a little bit more apparent in that Vegas series. Now, going back to Tampa Bay, you know, they've got their home crowd. I think they can handle the ups and the downs, because there's going to be some quiet moments where they're going to have to gather up a little bit more inside that locker room. But Z makes a good point about the additions to Montreal. I wish Montreal had 20,000 fans in their building to get them riding when everything's weren't good. I think that's really important. I think a lot of teams can really benefit from that.
Hey, Hanger, just a devil's advocate to something you said. You know, 2 years ago when the St. Louis Blues go into Boston, how much experience did St. Louis have in those situations? And Boston had that core of Chara and Rask, Bergeron, Marchand. They had been, you know, this wasn't their first rodeo.
It's funny, Z, that you say that, because I think game one, you know, St. Louis won in Boston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, game six, Boston won in St. Louis, do or die, lose and go home day. Mm-hmm. And then St. Louis wins in game seven. So I don't think there's a, you know, automatic criteria that we're going to follow that's going to be the right script. And I think that's the great thing about a seven game series, is how teams handle the flow and the adversity. And, you know, great players have always told me that when you try to win the Stanley Cup on home ice, it is the most difficult, because all the younger players and all the families they're planning a party. Right. And that's what Boston did. Boston shoved Gloria, you know, right, right in the cellar in game six and sent a whole bunch of people sour going home, as everybody well knows. So
You talked about the St. Louis victory. To me, what jumped out there was Ryan O'Reilly was spectacular, but to me, the biggest difference was the size of the Blues defense. Mm-hmm. When you think of Petrangelo, Edmondson was on that team, Parayko, and Jay Bouwmeester. And I think a lot has been made in Montreal of the size of their top four defensemen. Ben Chiarot's been a horse. Ben Chiarot has been spectacular. Doesn't get the attention that maybe Petrie or Weber get because he's not offensively minded like those two guys. How important is the Montreal defense size against a Tampa team that is a little deeper than the teams they played and a little more mobile?
It really, really impressive. And Z, I'll just jump in here quickly, yeah. But you're right, John, about St. Louis, and it was greatly missed this year. You start adding shorter sticks. You don't stop the cycle as quickly. You don't get the sticks in the lanes as much. You can't chase down players once it goes man on man in the D zone. Something that Bouwmeester and Parayko were so good at, the exchanges between forwards and defensemen, because they're long sticks and mobile and good hockey sense. But you know, Montreal plays it a little bit differently. But there are some similarities. When you've got a great goaltender and you've got that trust, the trust is you take the shots from the outside. We're going to look for sticks. And Montreal made some mistakes in that last series, and it nearly cost them. And Joel Edmondson in particular, because I watch him quite closely. He's a guy that I keep in touch with. But there's a couple times that they were on the outside, and they got Riley Smith scored a tap in on the inside. But that's the area that Montreal is really strong at. They're not going to worry about the shot. They're not going to try to block it. They're going to go in there. They're going to box out. They're going to cross-check in the teeth. They're going to push you to the outside. And that's where Ben Chiarot and Joel Edmondson, Shea Weber, and Petrie in particular have been so great.
Well, you bring up Shea Weber. I think that this guy, I'm not saying he's not getting the kudos that he deserves, but, you know, people look and go, oh, he's got 4 points. I think after Carey Price, and I know, you know, people will say Caulfield and Suzuki, I think this guy's been their most valuable player. I mean, you talked about you've never seen a team in a long time use the boards or the glass as much. I mean, they're going by the thing that we learned in minor hockey, when in doubt, get it out. There's no fancy plays or that. And Weber has been such a force in his own zone. The way that they've been able to box out opposing players in front of Carey Price. I mean, we talked about Carey Price earlier and, to Bob's point about guys trying to make the perfect shot. The other thing is there's no rebounds against him. There's no second chances because they're either being cleared out by those four defensemen who Luke Richardson, by the way, the other day called the Clydesdale. So,
Hey, that's a good Ottawa boy.
But the way that they keep players out of the blue paint. And I go back to something that Paul Maurice said after the first three games against Winnipeg, where he said, this series, the difference is in the series is the blue paint. We're getting there and they're not letting us get there. And I think that's huge for a goalie like Carey Price. Like Bob said, you give Carey Price an extra second to see a shot or not have to worry about where the rebound's going, he's going to be that much better.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and chat some more as we prepare for game one of the Stanley Cup final. Back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, it's Darren Pang, it's Mike Zeisberger. So we are here singing the praises of the Montreal Canadiens, well, for the most part, and we should. What did we miss during the regular season? Or maybe more accurately, what did they miss during the regular season? They got off to a quick start. They got into the pandemic stuff. Their goaltender got hurt. They finished, I think, with the 16th best record.
18th.
18th best record. So this shouldn't be happening, guys. And we can sit here and wax eloquently about the greatness of the blue line. And I'm not here to dispute that. But this kind of stuff, you just can't snap your fingers and have this kind of stuff happen. Somebody explain this to me, will you?
It's hard to explain, though. There's a magic in chemistry and timing, cohesion and belief and proving people wrong. I think the best thing that happened to the Montreal Canadiens was playing the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. That's it for me. I mean, why? Because everybody expected Toronto to roll over. I mean, that's Toronto. I mean, they were already planning the parade route. And when you get inside a locker room, not only just any locker room in any division, and that happens, it's special for the underdog to rally and try to upset them. But when you're talking about Quebec, who's only got a small portion of Ontario, because I grew up in Ottawa and I was a huge Montreal Canadiens fan, not a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. But then you've got, you know, maybe you got Manitobans that are big time Habs fans and they don't like the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know where I'm getting to here.
Yeah.
So they're the smaller, they're almost like Finland playing Sweden, you know, all those Olympics. And those Finns, they just didn't go away. And there was a hardened group of players inside that room. And I think too, Bob, last year in the playoffs, when Claude Julien went down with his heart ailment, Kirk Muller stepped in. I don't know if you remember, he sat Brendan Gallagher for a game and everybody up in arms. What's going on here? They ended up, I think they formed a little resilience and they formed a little, hey, we don't have to be the best team in the league, but I think if we get there, we can shock some people. And I think that mentality has what's driven them here, because they've had to face another coaching change. They've had to face another coaching change again. And I think that Luke should just take this all the way through, and maybe Donald should stay on the sidelines while he does so, because he's having so much success right here.
I think that when you break it down, it comes down to four players who have made big time contributions, and that's helped the Canadians change the tide and the narrative. And three of them didn't play for much of the final month of the season. Carey Price was out with an injury. Gallagher was out with an injury. Shea Weber was out with an injury. All three of those guys come back for the start of the playoffs, so that's a big boost. And look, I'm not going to jump on the Cole Caulfield bandwagon and say this guy should be the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. But when you see the way that his teammates interact with this kid, who, by the way, looks 10, you know, and the energy that he's brought to this team, I just think that he's brought an injection of youth and this kind of like, yeah, maybe I don't have any experience, but I don't really care. I'm just sucking it all in and going out and do what I do. I think when you look at, Bob, of adding those four players into the mix, I'm not saying that's why the Canadians have played that much better, but certainly those four guys have played key roles, and they really didn't for the last month or two of the
season. Well, I'm not going to dispute that. I couldn't dispute that. The question, I suppose, now becomes, well, how come all the hockey puck experts, like you guys, didn't figure that out? Because when these playoffs started, Montreal was going to get steamrolled by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Forget Winnipeg, forget Vegas, and now forget Tampa Bay. They weren't going to go anywhere.
John talked me into going back in the Leafs, so that's my.
No, listen, Bob. I'm not sure Montreal had belief in themselves when the playoffs started, because let's remember who didn't dress that first game against the Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. Cole Caulfield did not dress. Kakumeni did not dress. They thought they were going to be smart and go with a veteran lineup. And then after the Tavares injury and they won that game, they realized that they had a chance, and they were down 3-1. They had nothing to lose by going with the kids. In fact, everybody was saying, hey, let the kids play because they need the experience. And it paid off in the end. In my opinion, it does all go back to Carey. It does. It all goes back to Carey Price, that he gave the, you know, the defenseman confidence. He gave all of his teammates confidence, and then they decided to get the ball rolling. So it's not as if that Montreal from day one had complete belief. I think that they were trying to struggle and find their identity as that first series continued.
Well. So here we go with a best of seven for the championship, with the defending Stanley Cup champions against an 18th seed.
Yeah, Cinderella. Tramps versus Cinderella. Yeah. The other thing is that Tampa, I mean, when you in watching Tampa play the Islanders, which was, you know, the Tampa played, I would argue, five different ways of hockey in that series. You know, and in fact, in game seven, they out-trotched Trots in game seven. They played Tampa Bay hockey, or they played Islander hockey to win the game. But when you look at all of their guys that, forget about the big wheels, forget about Kucherov and Stamkos and even Braden Point, Alex Killorn, Yanni Gourde, Anthony Cirelli, all these guys, they are so good and so clutch when these big games going on. That's where that, in my mind, that's where I think Montreal's still learning to do that. I mean, Josh Anderson is doing much better, but I'd rather have Alex Killorn, you know, but so that's where I think that's why this is such a fascinating matchup.
I'm going to follow up on the way that Tampa Bay played, and John Cooper went to a bit of a theory that Craig Berube successfully utilized as well. He finally got his fourth line going, John.
Yeah.
Got that. Finally, you know, that maroon line actually had some impact. And I think looking at Montreal with Staal and with Corey Perry, you know, Corey Perry's brought to the Montreal Canadiens what Pat Maroon brought last year and the year before, a little bit of abrasiveness, a history so he could step up and chirp at guys, get in their kitchen a little bit, rattle some pans, but never retaliate. You never see Pat Maroon retaliate. He's not a guy after the whistle that's going to go in there and start getting the stinky leather glove and get the extra 2 minutes. He's too disciplined that way, too smart that way. And same with Corey Perry. So that part of the lineup is what I'm really looking forward to see what kind of matchup gets going there.
Well, again, invariably, when we get to this time of year, we spend the vast majority of time talking about the blue line, the defensemen, the guys that are playing great. And we've been doing it with Montreal here. And nobody is going to suggest for a second that Tampa's blue line is inferior to a great many teams. I don't know. I'm not going to say it's the best, but
pretty close. You know,
they're pretty close. So it raises the most puzzling issue of all, and I do not want to bring this back directly to the Toronto Maple Leafs, so let me put it in a generic way. What's the relevance of going out and acquiring high performance scorers at maximum dollars when at the end, if you want to win, get me three great blue liners, a couple of pretty good ones, and I'll take and a good goaltender, and I'll take my chances from there. Don't we all agree to that?
Well, we agree for sure. Now, sometimes, Bob, when you still have to have those players just to get in that position. And maybe that's where some teams know they've got a void there. So you have to spend the money. You're kind of forced to get yourself in that position. But you know me, you build from the goal crease out. There's 1,000%. And your goaltender doesn't have to be Carey Price because there's only so many of those. But if you can surround that goaltender with six big bodies that are mobile, that are defenders, like we've just seen the last few Stanley Cups, and a great system, you have to have a system. You have to have a belief in that system. You have to have trust in that system. If you don't have a system, it doesn't work. So, but in going back to your point, in a seven-game series, what would you like? A light, fluffy, highly skilled player that plays on the outside, or somebody that goes through the middle and will, you know, run right through you? I'll take the guy that runs right through you, wins all the stick battles, plays heavy on pucks, because they're the ones that win at the end of the day.
Look, Bob, it wasn't true. Sorry, Z. I wish it wasn't true, but the game changes when the playoffs come.
Sure does.
You know, and it has been the that way change. Since we were 5 years old and before. I don't like it. I think playoff hockey generally is far less interesting. It's intriguing because it's impactful. It's more meaningful. But is it entertaining? No, I don't think it is. Clutching, grabbing.
I think some of it is. I think some of it is, Bob.
Well, you can say what you want. Look at the officials put the whistles away. Things that would be called on a regular basis during the regular season are just not called now. So they allow these guys to play completely different. The clutching, the grabbing, cross-checking, all this stuff that was supposedly eliminated from the game. Playoffs came. Now, whatever you want.
You know, Scott Stevens won a Conn Smythe. You know, maybe this is, you were talking about Shea Weber, Z, at this particular point, but, you know, what's the most impactful way to win? Bob, when we were growing up, the pride of a hockey player, whether it be a small centerman or a winger or a defenseman, was how heavy are you on your stick? How heavy are you on the puck? How relentless are you? How tenacious are you? And that's the area that, although the officiating is getting a lot of criticism, I mean, I still believe that in the regular season, when they start calling those just those chintzy little plays that barely touch the bottom of your stick, to me, that's wrong officiating for me. And it sets up an unexpected standard for the Stanley Cup final, because there's no way the refs are going to go that way. Otherwise, it'd be a parade to the penalty box. So I think they're making a mistake in the regular season a little bit, you know, to advance the game. And that's just my opinion. But there's so many times in the regular season, I look at a call, my partner looks at a call, the fans look at a call, 10 guys on the ice look at a call, and no one knows what the call is. It can't be a good call. So that's where I'm at on that.
Well, I mean, not to belabor this point, Z, I know I've cut you off a couple of times here. Let me throw this at you. Well, no. So is there another sport where the officiating changes as dramatically when you get to a championship series or game as hockey?
No. It's the fastest game. It's the hardest game to officiate.
My pet peeve is basketball, Bob, but it has nothing to do with the officiating, but that's got nothing to do when the calls change. It's got to do with who the calls change for. Okay. Your second rotation center is not going to get the kind of, you know, oh, we'll let it go type attitude from officials as it is if LeBron is coming down the lane. We've all seen that, whether, you know, the superstars travel, the superstars are allowed to, you know, instead of a charging foul, they get a blocking foul, and not to get too far into basketball. But I think that's where the difference is. In basketball, it's not so much when the officiating changes, it's for who.
Well, maybe. I'll buy that philosophy. The point, though, is it any different in game one of the regular season than it is in game seven of the NBA final? I don't think it is. I don't think officials in the NBA put their whistles away and quote unquote let them play. I think they call fouls that we don't understand? God, yes. And they do it every single game you will watch. But is there an obvious, apparent, conscious effort to conduct yourself differently if you're an official in other sports? And I don't see it.
All I know is in the Stanley Cup final, the rotation of officials they will have, I think that the consistency of what they will call in game one will be the same in the consistency of the game clinching championship game, when they give out the trophy. I think that there will be a consistency that both teams understand and probably both teams endorse. And I think that's enough to buy into it.
Yeah, I want to go back to the other thing, just a quick point on it. And the difference between the NBA superstars is that it's embarrassing that they'll go down and act like they've been fouled. Whereas in the NHL, our players have been taught through an early time, most of them, to stay on your feet and have some pride and not try to embellish and capture a call that way. The NBA protects those players. The NHL, I mean, our star players have the puck on their stick more than anybody else, and yet the percentage of calls against them really level out between them and a fourth line player. Well, so I give our stars a lot of credit.
You sound like Connor McDavid.
I think it is the truth if you want to compare the two sports.
There's some validity to it. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, by that criteria, you'd never watch a soccer game in your entire life, would you?
No, I don't.
That's what my point. I mean,
that's too big.
Hey, Portugal. For you, they are. Sure.
Let's not get into the specifics of who played who yesterday.
Portugal lost. Come on.
I understand they lost. Who cares?
Portuguese.
Good for them. How many guys were shot from the stands?
Oh, don't go there.
Well, I just did. the correct answer, of course, is zero, but there were probably several who acted as if they had been. And that's the essence of what we're discussing here. Mm-hmm. All right. Before we let you wander away, good luck with this. What do you like in this series? Z, I'll give it to you first.
Uh-oh.
You all right?
Look at that. I'm choking on my own predictions.
Okay.
Which wasn't Montreal at the beginning of the year, I can tell you that. You know what, Bob? I picked Tampa in seven. I think that, you know, what John Cooper said the other day holds a lot of truth in that he said, we're playing another team like the team we just played. And by that, he's saying, like, you know, there are a lot of similarities between the Islanders team that they just got through and the Montreal Canadiens. I do think that the Montreal Canadiens have maybe a little more firepower than the Islanders did. But when I look at Tampa, I think they have the best goalie in the National Hockey League. I'm not saying the best one playoff goalie, because I think Carey Price is just as good as him now. But overall, he's the best goalie in the world. I think they have the best defenseman in the world in Victor Hedman. They have Kucherov. They have Stamkos. They have Braden Point, who was flirting with the most consecutive goals in a playoff series. Kept finished one behind Reggie Leach. I think nine consecutive games he scored, which is really incredible. And then to Panger's point earlier, some of the lesser known guys like the Barclay Goodrows that Julien Brisbois picked up last season, they bring that sandpaper element to where, as Panger says and John said, you can play any way you want against Tampa and they'll find a way. So I think Montreal is going to surprise a lot of the doubters. Some of us are on the bandwagon, like I was with St. Louis after watching them, you know, for two rounds going into the final 2 years ago. I think a lot of people aren't giving Montreal their due, but I just think that this Tampa team is one of the most complete teams that I've seen in a long, long time. And I just think that that'll give them the nudge over the finish line in seven.
Darren?
Yeah, as much as I lean towards this great story of the Montreal Canadiens, I just think that the Tampa Bay Lightning are have no weaknesses. So I'll lean towards that. I think if Kucherov was so badly wounded and he wasn't able to play, I think that's the difference between me leaning one way or the other way. It looks to me like he's going to be, you know, just fine, maybe not 100%, but it looks like he's going to be a player that can be effective. And that dot-to-dot passing that they have, that creativity can wear on you and wear you down. And so I'll take the Tampa Bay Lightning in six games. I would never go four games in this kind of thing. Five even seems like a stretch. I think Montreal's going to win game one, and I think they're going to make this a series. Will it end up being like the 79 New York Rangers and Montreal Canadiens? I think the Rangers and JD won the first game, but then it was a sweep after that. But I think Montreal's going to win game one or game two in Tampa Bay and make this a really interesting start to the series.
The hard part of this, Darren, is that you're talking about game series that you remember as a young kid and series that I actually worked. So that's the hard part. So that was, by the way, that was a famous, there was a famous event in that game in New York where Serge Savard skated in and was in the crease and he disallowed the goal and he turned to JD and said, don't worry, I'll be back. And they came down the ice and scored again. So,
hold off yours. I know John, you want to jump in here, but I'm going to ask you to hold off and we'll do ours in the postscript to this.
Fair enough.
So we have two Tampas, 1-7, 1-6. Mm-hmm. Whether we may chat with you again before this final series is over, or we may wait until the off season, or God forbid, next fall. But whatever we do, if we don't talk to you, thank you very much for your contributions and enjoy the summertime, will you?
Thanks, boys.
Bob and John, thank you for having this on.
Guys.
Always appreciate it. Take care.
Darren Pang, Mike Zeisberger. We'll come back and we'll get John's opinion on this after these messages. Our thanks to Darren Pang and Mike Zeisberger, of course, for joining us. And I made the audience wait for your august prognostication for reasons that are inexplicable. But nonetheless, give us your take.
I think Montreal's going to win. I really do. I think that. I think it's and Tampa's not going to take them lightly. They're not. But I think that the Tampa depth can be matched by the Montreal depth. I think the Montreal defense has proved to be up to the challenge. And I think Carey Price can win a game by himself. So I think Montreal will win the Stanley Cup in six games in Montreal in game six. As Darren said, they're going to win game one. I believe they're going to win game one. And when they take home ice back and they can win both, they can win all three games at the Bell Center.
It's been a while since we've seen a team that was this big a surprise in a Stanley Cup final. Of course, there's always a surprise. A little, you know, you're a little surprised at this team and not at the. There's almost invariably an upset or two. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that you get a team who was 18th during the regular season, who was tangibly an underdog in every series that they played, was down 3-1 in one of those series and managed to come back. So we don't get this situation often. I just think when you get to the final, if you have one team that's a big underdog or should be a big underdog, almost invariably their pedigree shows, mm-hmm. or more accurately, perhaps the pedigree of the better team shows. I think Tampa's going to win this, and I don't think it'll necessarily be easy, but I think they're going to win it at home in five.
Yeah. The interesting thing, the one thing I would say, Bob, is don't discount health. And I think that the biggest thing in Montreal's favor of health was it was easy to beat the Winnipeg Jets in four games. And that level of to be able to get through a series without a major injury, although they did lose Jake Evans, but they haven't seemed to miss him that much. To go through it and have that is, I think, something that's is going to put them in good stead.
I am not for a second diminishing the significance of what I've watched. We've all watched the Montreal Canadiens do. Mm-hmm. They have been very impressive. And nobody is a bigger fan, proponent of the value of Carey Price than me.
Yeah.
With due respect, I think in the big game, Carey Price is the goaltender I want above everybody else. And I know he can steal this series.
Yeah.
The goaltender at the other end is pretty good too.
Oh, no.
And whatever Montreal has done, they're now in against the defending Stanley Cup champions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the difference. I'm going to take Tampa in five.
Yeah.
And for all our friends in Quebec, I hope I'm wrong. We'll pause today. We'll come back tomorrow and continue the conversation, perhaps on a different topic. Perhaps not. We hope you'll join us for that. For John Chan and Bob McCallum. See you tomorrow.